They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org.
Taxpayers left holding the bag.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Doug Krisner. The British mortgage lender Northern Rock was one of the biggest casualties of the credit crunch. Since last summer, the UK government has been propping up the bank with about $50 billion worth of public money. And for a while, it looked as though there would be a rescue from private enterprise. I'm afraid not. And now the government is taking a drastic step to keep Northern Rock in business. From London, Stephen Beard reports on the move toward nationalization.
The government has abandoned the effort to find a private sector rescuer for Northern Rock. The two deals on the table were deemed inadequate. Taking the bank into state ownership is politically risky. Ever since the 70s, many British voters have associated nationalisation with failure and incompetence. There could be a lot of lawsuits too. Nationalising the Rock will likely mean that shareholders get next to nothing for their shares. Robin Ashby speaks for some of those investors.
As far as the shareholders are concerned, they're having their company stolen off them by the government, and the government will have to compensate them. That has to be fair compensation. So there will be almost certainly be court cases going on for years, right up to the next general election.
The biggest threat is to the public purse. The British government is now running a bank with $200 billion worth of mortgages on its books. If the UK housing market follows the US example, British taxpayers could foot the bill for billions. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Across Europe this morning, the major stock markets have edged higher. Many of the Asian markets were down overnight. Banking and insurance stocks leading that decline. No trading here in the U.S. as we observe President's Day. These are challenging times for the print advertising business. The intranet has been siphoning a lot of ad dollars, with one exception, as Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
Newspapers have seen circulation tank and advertising dollars with it, but one part of the publishing industry is booming.
Go to your local Barnes & Noble and look at the magazine stand. It's expanded.
Tom Rosensteel directs the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He says magazines for niche interests like gourmet cooking and backpacking have exploded. And he says advertisers are gravitating to them more and more. They know they'll reach an audience that is interested in their product. What's more, he says, niche publications are well positioned to leverage the internet.
Readers of niche publications may be quite likely to fill out surveys, to have email alerts sent to them, and the technology that is challenging print can be complementary to a niche magazine rather than a threat.
Rosensteel says readers of Healthy Cooking, for example, are more likely to visit the website for recipes and tips. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
We've got presidential primaries tomorrow in Wisconsin and Hawaii. None of the top candidates are running publicly financed primary campaigns. With public financing, a limited amount of fundraising is matched by taxpayer money. Now, in return, there are strict fundraising limits. Ever since Watergate, major candidates have accepted public financing in the general election. Well, this year could be different, as John Dimsdale reports.
Campaign finance reformer John McCain last week opted out of public finance limits for the primaries. Steve Weissman at the Campaign Finance Institute says the switch reflects the reversal of McCain's financial prospects.
McCain wanted to consider the option when he couldn't raise enough money, But the primary victories have enabled him now to raise so much money that he says, why should I accept these spending limits?
A year ago, Senators McCain and Barack Obama signed a pledge to accept the public financing limit of $85 million in the general election if their opponent does the same. Now, Obama has backtracked, saying only that he'll work with McCain to lay out ground rules if they're the nominees. Trevor Potter, legal counsel to the McCain campaign, says Obama's change reflects a reversal of his financial prospects.
He's discovered he can raise a great deal of money and might be able to raise much more than the $85 million he could spend in the system.
So far, Senator Hillary Clinton has not committed to public financing limits in the general election. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Today's holiday is set aside to commemorate former Presidents Washington and Lincoln. What would the celebration be like without a little shopping? President's Day has become a major retail event. From cars to clothes, there'll be no shortage of bargains. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports on a story for one store catering to the fashion conscious.
The brand new H&M at the Willow Grove Mall outside Philadelphia doesn't open till noon, but 26-year-old Patrice Boxley showed up 2 hours early. She joined a throng of shoppers waiting to pounce.
It's inexpensive, but you can get some really fresh, funky stuff.
If it doesn't last, it's okay. It was only $6.
H&M is short for Hennies and Moritz. The Swedish company launched its first U.S. store in New York City 7 years ago. Since then, it's opened 135 stores throughout the country with similar fanfare. H&M and other so-called fast fashion chains are transforming the clothing industry. At most high fashion houses, it can take 6 months for a new design to reach the store rack. H&M can deliver a cheap knockoff in as little as 3 weeks. New styles arrive every day, in big cities sometimes 2 or 3 times a day. Sarah Denethorne is a self-described chronic shopper. She says the constant churn feeds her habit.
If you see it, you have to get it, because it may not be there next time you go back.
The frenzy is spreading fast. H&M is expanding into the Middle East and China. This shopper browses one of two new stores in Shanghai.
I'm looking for a t-shirt to match my skirt today.
She says she owns 100 pairs of shoes and shops about once a week.
Now, if you're talking about the whole world doing that, that will have big ripple effects throughout the economy and the ecology.
That's Juliette Shore. She teaches sociology at Boston College and wrote the book Born to Buy. She says, for one thing, as clothing has gotten cheaper, we're buying more of it, almost twice as much in this country as we did 15 years ago. Shore says each blouse and boxer short takes a toll on the earth, from the pesticides used to grow cotton to the carbon released transporting it. And there's a subtler toll.
Every individual has to do a lot more work to stay current. It's like a treadmill where we just sped up, but we're all just staying in place.
Back at the mall in suburban Pennsylvania, Patrice Boxley says she's thought about stepping off that treadmill.
I just watched a special last week about the whole global warming thing. And like I said, I was going to go on a financial fast, but I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
In Willow Grove, Pennsylvania, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Today, President Bush is in Tanzania. He'll sign an aid package worth nearly $700 million. It's part of an agreement with the Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC. This money will be used to build roads, bring electricity to people, and provide safe drinking water. Let's bring in correspondent Gretchen Wilson. Gretchen, what's the background on the president's aid to Africa?
The MCC was started by Bush in 2004. To qualify, countries have to meet a certain threshold of democratic policies, free market reforms, and a basic capacity for good governance.
So is it different then than what we see with traditional aid packages?
Exactly. Traditionally, been two approaches to aid in Africa. One is paternalistic, in which African countries are seen as charity cases, and the other is exploitative, in which countries are coming to Africa to buy up the resources of these countries. And so the White House says it's rejecting both approaches and instead is treating Africa's leaders as equal partners, setting clear goals and measurable results.
So, Gretchen, what types of conditions have been placed on this aid by the administration?
The administration has placed a number of conditions on this kind of aid: free market reforms, opening up economies for small businesses and entrepreneurs, opening up borders for trade. It also looks at other things like immunization rates. It looks at girls' education, and it looks at other ways in which democracy and freedom are supported in these countries. However, there's also another condition that is not really talked about, although some people on the ground here tend to criticize, and that has to do with the United States' war on terror. There is a lot of speculation that if a country, for example, doesn't really support the United States' foreign policy, will it be ostracized from this kind of aid?
Is aid coming from other countries in the world other than the U.S., and are other countries trying to buy a little bit of influence with this aid?
A number of other countries are really seeking inroads in Africa. And there's a lot of skepticism about all of these external players. China is, of course, a major player. It's been giving big grants, loans, and developing these infrastructure projects. A lot of the comment about Bush's visit here is seen as Bush trying to counterbalance some of the very visible influence that China is wielding on the continent.
Gretchen Wilson reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Well, here's a musical way of celebrating President's Day. A new CD, Abraham Lincoln in Song. It's a collection of songs from the Civil War era, many of which were personal favorites of our 16th president. As we wrap up, here is Battle Cry of Freedom. In Los Angeles, I'm Doug Krisner. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.